Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. And I've asked Kat to come up and tell us a joke.
Kat, alcoholic.
Yeah.
I think I've told this joke, but I'm not 100% sure. So, a drunk walks into the bar, sits down, and demands a drink. "Get out," says the bartender. "I don't serve drunks here." The drunk staggers out of the front door, only to come back from the side door. He sits at the bar, bangs his fist, and says, "I demand a drink." And the bartender says, "Get out. I told you to leave." The drunk gets out, and then he comes through the back door. Once again, he sits down and loudly demands a drink. The bartender, now getting mad, looks at the drunk and yells, "I told you, no drunks allowed. Get out." The drunk looks at the bartender, and he goes, "How many bars do you work at?"
Thank you. Thank you, Kat. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? If so, let's start the meditation. I'm going to ask you to follow along in the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's up here on the screens. God, let your love shine through us like a fog light. So
to those who are lost, sick, and dying, and find your love through me.
There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Isabel to come up and read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. So it is kind of important to know what one is.
Covered alcoholic. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous, page 56, 567, 568. I just want to make a special announcement. We came in from Jersey and Philly tonight out to hear Peter and see Marion and to be with God and alcoholics. And tonight just happens on this day that a dear friend of mine, Beth from Philadelphia, can you please stand, is celebrating 23 years of consideration. Denise from South Jersey is celebrating 10 years of continuous work. It really is God and AA. Thank you.
Thank you. please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or just turn one off, because it's very distracting. And just if you got to use your phone, it's all right, but please step outside. And now I think Peter's on his eighth session, I believe, ish. All right, I'll welcome Peter.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Peter, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And welcome our visitors from Jersey and Philly, and congratulations to the two women celebrating. They're from Jersey. If we didn't let them celebrate, their husbands are outside with guns. So we were forced to have, no. Just a joke, don't tell them. Glad to be here and continue this step series. I think it's about session eight or so. And get to share a little bit about my experience getting into 8 and 9. And we have some mechanics in the book that are really important to follow. But I always found the experiential part of what it's like to make a list and prepare, which is what Step 8's all about. And the first seven proposals are the thing that position us to get there, and what it's like actually going out and making amends, what that feels like, taking the mechanics out there in real life. Because it's, for me, we did a lot of work prior to this, but if we look at the steps, it's really the first time we're going live and going out there, the folks who we harmed, and hat in hand with a spirit of humility. And I'll just share a quick ninth step story before we get going. It's one of those any lengths that you didn't know what any lengths looks like until it shows up. And my sponsor was visiting Staten Island, some friends there with a gentleman, Joe H. from California. And Joe was all about, where are you in amends? And we sat down and he says, where are you in amends? I said, I'm pretty clear except for one. And it's this woman I knew many years ago, and my sponsor told me to leave it alone. He says, well, that's nonsense, is you need to find her. And I explained the harm cause, and it was the usual thing we would expect in toxic relationships. And I said, I have no idea where to find her. And about a week or two went by, and I'm making some calls, and I'm inquiring, and lo and behold, I get her phone number, and I make a call. And I was speaking in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn this one particular night, and this woman lived in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, and I'm living in Staten Island. So I was married at the time, and I explained to my wife that I was going to go see this person to make amends. She was cool with it, and Mark H. was my sponsor, and he says, by all means, go. And we made a quick prayer on the phone, and I go do my talk in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. When I get done with that, I make this call, and I don't know if this was good or bad, but she knew who I was immediately. Soon as I says, hi, it's Peter. And I explained to her I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know I've harmed you, and I need to make this right. And she says, well, I need money. I said, but you're not my wife. No. And so she told me where she lived, and off I go. And as I get towards Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, I'm noticing I'm going into, like, the hood. And I drive up to the address, and she's standing outside with a pit bull. There's not another good sign. And so I took a look, and I knew she wasn't doing too well. And I explained to her briefly our fellowship. I asked her, what can I do to make this right? Is there anything you need to tell me? She wasn't hearing of it. She just wanted the money. And it wasn't financial restitution. She asked for money, so I gave her money. And I wished her well, got my car, made a prayer, and I began to drive away. Now, in the project, sometimes the cops drive through the projects. And unbeknownst to me, they were sitting there watching this money transaction. And as I'm driving away, they come out of the projects, and they're right behind me. And I never forget, you know, I made sure my seatbelt was on. And I come to a light. I want to say Emmons Avenue, but I'm not sure. And I make a left, and they make a left. I come to the next light, make a right. They make a right, and the lights go on. They pull me over. And license and registration, and they look at me. So you're in Staten Island. What are you doing here? So I was just, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I tell them. I just spoke in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, And he says, hold on a second. You live in Staten Island. You're in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. Now you're in Sheepshead Bay. I said, yes, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, what are you doing here? I said, I'm trying to make right the wrongs I committed in the past. And he said, get out of the car. And I used to have my coin on a chain, and it fell out. And I says, look, see, I'm really a member of AA. And this cop, who was about 2 feet tall, had a Napoleon complex, starts going after me. I mean, he's reading me the riot act, and he's just really getting ugly. What do I look like, a fool? What are you doing down here? I saw you give money to that woman. You got anything on you? Tell me now. You know the drill. And they pat me down, so now a crowd starts to form. It was like that show Cops. And as they pat me down, the blue wagon, unmarked wagon, turns the corner, and I said, I'm gonna get popped tonight for something I didn't do. And all I can think of was, my sponsor knows I'm here, my wife knows I'm here, my dad doesn't know I'm here, and he's gonna find this out, and I'm gonna kill him this time for sure, with like 10 years sober. And I says, okay, God, you know I'm here too. Let's see how this works out. And the cop tells me, I'm gonna go through your car, and if I find anything, you're going in, so tell me now. And he's ripping my car apart. The other cop, who was about 8 feet tall, he says, what's going on? I'm telling him, he says, is this that immense thing you guys do? I says, yeah, I sponsor guys on a job. He says, yeah, they did it to me too. He just shut up and don't say anything. That's my sergeant. Guy comes back, reads me the riot act. He tells me, never be in the neighborhood again. I don't want to see you down here. So I went to shake his hand like an idiot, and he just walked away. I got back in my car, and I drove away. Well, I call my sponsor, and I had a few choice words for my sponsor at this point about any lengths. And that is a story that I like to share because I didn't see any of that coming. I thought I was going to see this person I knew in the past make amends, eyeball to eyeball, and I'd be done, and it had some twists and turns. For me, the moral of the story is if I'm clean, I'm clean. Not only physically clean, but if I'm clean, my intentions were pure. My actions were to do God's work and fix this up. I offered her this way of life, and I put that to bed, and it was closed. So if this woman ever walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to go, uh-oh. Because my past is clear. And the thing about trying to be present, how could I be present if I'm still haunted by the past, if I'm still driven by the past? How could I live now crushed by how I lived then? And so the great thing about amends is we get to put pieces back together. And it's not an I'm sorry. I've shared this from a million podiums. And I'm sorry is more about me getting off the hook. You let me get off the hook so I feel better about myself. Let me alleviate my guilt when I ought to be a more loving thing, was to help others alleviate their own guilt. And when we make amends, we're able to do that. I let people off the hook. Because I've had people in the past who've done bad things, and I every once in a while I think of them and say, wow, that guy never came around. They never apologize. And I get all worked up over it. And when we do and we go make amends, we eliminate that from the equation for those people. So although it's about me going to make amends and getting free and healing inside, I'm also extending a healing to someone else. And before I enter the world of the Spirit, I need to be able to do things like this. I can't enter the world of the Spirit when I still have a whole bunch of amends. Moreover, how could I claim to have a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps when I haven't cleaned up the wreckage of my past that I'm currently aware of? So the question my sponsor would always ask people, and he would always ask me, is how many outstanding amends do I currently have that I could be making today without causing more harm that I haven't made yet? And whenever I do a workshop, I ask how many people have had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. Most of the hands go up. And then I ask that question, and people start to get squirrely because we made 10 out of 100 amends. And it isn't that we're out seeking those folks to make amends. It's I've gotten comfortable. I'll get to it tomorrow. I got things to do. And tomorrow never shows up. And who has taken over is that alcoholic individual not drinking yet. The alcoholic individual who seeks control over everything, including my recovery now, seeks control over this recovery process, seeks control, and doesn't want to go to those many any lengths because I've rested on my laurels, even though I'm completely unaware that I'm resting on my laurels. And so I'm no longer fully standing under God. We'll never be able to fully understand God, but I need to fully stand under God. I'm not doing that anymore because I'm God. And one of the reasons I don't go out and make amends is because now I begin to have, without me being aware of first step problem. I've risen above my alcoholism. I don't need to go to those many any lens. When the sponsee calls me and I'm encouraging them to go make the many any lens, but with me, the game changes, the rules change because I've gotten comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous. And only with the guidance of a really good sponsor will he be able to shake it up, to wake it up, to remind me of the many any lens I must go to. Forget about getting to go to these things. I must go do it if I'm ever going to be free. Because no matter how fast I walk, alcoholism is stepping right behind me. And I will get hijacked. And the thing I've learned about alcoholism, not only with my sort of countless others, it will never announce its arrival. So I'm kind of coasting in step 9, claiming I've had a spiritual awakening as the result of the 12 steps. And I really haven't, and alcoholism getting closer. And I still have, I'm still seeing the world through my past. I'm still hearing the world through my past. That's my Rolodex on how to operate out there. And self manifested in various ways. Self is running my life, and I don't even know it. Folks around me might know it. I'm the last one to find out. I find out when I ask for a double vodka at the bar. Then it's too late. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, and incredibly patient. So if I'm sitting here tonight and I haven't made amends, this isn't about right and wrong, good and bad. It's just raising the level of awareness, which is the greatest stage for change. Once we become aware of a problem, maybe we can take some action. How hungry am I to get better? How free do I want to be? If I go to an ocean with a thimble, I come home with a thimble full of water, and AA is offering me the entire ocean, and I settle for this little thing to get comfortable. I'm sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous 5, 10, 15 years, and I still have an amends list, which will prohibit me from revisiting the steps again, because if I don't go to the steps again, I'm going to hit that amends piece, and I'm not going there. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. And when I began getting sober and I began this process, trust me, if it wasn't if you couldn't see it outwardly, it was in. The venom, the contempt, the anger, and all driven by fear that was going on in my soul. I was afraid of everything and angry about a lot of things. I didn't know which way out, and I would double up on meetings, triple up on, you know, when you're new, you get your running partners in there, you're knocking out the morning meeting, the noon meeting, the afternoon, and I'm doing all these meetings, but I still had to go home with me, and that thing was always on me, especially when you put your head on a pillow at night and you can't sleep because you got all these scenarios going on. I was sharing with someone earlier, I mean, I'm an alcoholic, and it's so typical of me as an alcoholic. There's nothing going on. It's all good, and my mind makes something go on. It creates something. And I'm always striving and never arriving. And when I get there, I'll be okay. This is how I was in early recovery. And I shared a story with Jeff today. I remember I got behind. I just got a brand new Lexus. It was an hour old. Had that new car smell. It was pristine. And I'm driving down Palmetto, and I hit A1A. It's summertime. The sun's out. The beach I can see. I got this brand new Lexus. I cannot believe I live in South Florida. I'm driving this wonderful car. Everything's great. And some knucklehead rolls up in like a Lambo or one of those Ferrari things. And I look at him. He looks at me. And I say, so this is it. I figure I was maybe 50, I forget how many years I'm down here, maybe 51. I'm going, 51 years old, you're driving a Lexus. You're getting all excited about a new Lexus. This guy's got one of these things. You should be driving that. Now, here's what would happen. Let's pretend I go and get this foreign car, and I spend way too much money, so you think I'm important. That's why we do these things. So I buy this car, and I have it, and I arrive again. I'm good again. And I decide to go down to the beach, and like most of us, we're on social media, and I see some friends in Hawaii, and I realize I'm on Boca Beach. I'm missing something. With the Lamborghini in the driveway, I'm supposed to be in Hawaii, not on Boca Beach, where the sand isn't even white. So I take the trip to Hawaii, and I arrive again. I got a Lamborghini, I'm sitting in Hawaii, everything's good, and then I hear somebody saying they're going to some fancy restaurant. Now I must go to that restaurant so I can arrive. And this goes on and on and on and on. And guess what? It never ends. It never ends. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I tell you how grateful I am for my sobriety, and in reality is I'm totally ungrateful. I'm restless here and discontented. And I'm still haunted by the past. And a lot of things are getting me thirsty. And I don't mean thirsty for a drink. Thirsty. I need a car. I need more money. I need a better job. I need new clothes. I need more clothes. I need even more clothes. I need stuff. And what I'm doing is I'm dressing up figuratively and literally for you. And the reason why I'm doing it for you is not out of respect for you. Like if you invite me to your house, I want to be proper. It's so you think I'm okay. And I keep wrapping myself up in bandages of external stuff, car, money, property, prestige, all of it. So you think at some point, maybe this guy has some qualities. I know I don't. And if God forbid some of those start to unravel, you will find out who I really am, and who I believe I really am is a complete loser. So the game is on. I got to convince people that I'm okay. So you go like this. This is why, you know, I know a lot of folks who fall in love with the podium. I know a lot of folks who would give away their soul to be behind a podium. That's really deep water, because this won't last forever. And when the attachment is to attention and approval and accolades, that is my G-O-D, not the G-O-D. And I'm in serious, serious trouble. But the thing about trouble with alcoholism, it doesn't announce its arrival. It just shows up and hijacks me. Because I never rise above. I don't transcend alcoholism. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. What I can transcend, what we can transcend, is worldly stuff. It's nice to have a car, a nice car. It's nice to have nice clothes. It's nice to have money in the bank. That's good stuff. It's nice. But when I depend upon that to make me feel okay, I live in a world of impermanence. The way that God takes, God will remove too. And my whole soul, if you will, my beingness depends on having enough stuff. So how could I claim God? How could I claim to serve God when I'm actually a slave to the world? Got to get those clothes, got to get the new look, got to get the new haircut, got to get on and on and on. While I'm doing that, these are hitting fourth in the lineup. They don't even exist. And amends, I've gotten too prideful and too egotistical to go to hat in hand and say, I've screwed up, what can I do to make this right? I feel belittled by doing that because I've risen above everyone in the room now. And I've seen so many folks, people who speak around, people who are just members of AA and just go to meetings, who have lost this. And when they call me, they're in serious trouble. The world is begin to eat up. The world begins to eat you up. I mean, if we think about it, especially nowadays, it's beyond volatile out there. How do you navigate through this? If I don't have this as my GPS, God is my GPS, it'll gobble me up. And a lot of folks who call me, one of the questions I ask them is, do you have a sponsor? Let's start with that. And when they go, well, that means no. Right? I had a sponsor, but he didn't do it, and he moved here. Yes or no? No. Where are you at 10 and 11? What do you mean? Bad answer. No meditation, no prayer, no nightly review, no accountability. So now the structure's gotten really weak. It's wobbly. Then we get to the million-dollar question. How many outstanding amends do you have that you haven't completed yet? And when they give you the deer in the headlights look, it means they're way out of touch with this. I've made a few. How long ago? 2 years ago. How many amends have you made since? None. Now we know why you're getting thirsty. Now we know why we're back to manipulating, deceiving, distrust, because I'm living in the old. That's my default button. I go right back to that. That default button never comes out. So in 1988, I'm walking around with all of this stuff. I remember my first anniversary, I was working with my sponsor, and I was experiencing a little bit of freedom, but I was as tight as a baseball. It was still, life was on me. And it took a while for that thing to unravel, and it meant a daily surrender, and quite frankly, to the point of begging for mercy. God, have mercy on my soul. I don't know how to do this. One of the most frightening answers a newcomer tells me, you need to do this. I know what I'm doing. I know what I need to do this time. No, you don't. And it's no shame. Doesn't mean you're stupid. It's just a new life. We don't know how to do this. We're learning how to crawl before we need to learn how to walk. And someone has to show us, but I need to be a willing participant. And desperation. When desperation screams louder than the ego, we become teachable. And desperation is a good thing at the beginning, because it says, what do I do? I want to get out of this. I'm willing to exchange old ideas that do not work for new ones that seem to work for you. How do I do that? How do I go through a day pretty much unbothered by worldly clamors? How am I free when I see people from my past? How do I face my family that I've ripped apart, head up and shoulder square? How do you do this stuff? And how do you not think about a drink over everything? Right? I was talking to someone earlier today, and things didn't go her way, and her reply was, I want to get a drink and an eight ball right now. That's the default button. If I think with 30 years that that button has been removed from my life, I'm in deeper trouble than I really am. That's what I do as an alcoholic. I drink. Not thinking about it today, tomorrow's another day. So in 1988, I began this journey with my sponsor back in Brooklyn, and we started to open up the book and started to go through the book, methodically go through the book. Now, he wasn't a line-by-line guy. Some people are line-by-line guys. I'm not here to debate what's right and wrong, but he was about helping me get free and presenting me with considerations and explaining what I was up against and giving me the directions in the big book with written spiritual homework assignments, he called it. And I marched through one and felt really screwed. When I got done with step one, I felt more screwed than when I started. So I saw there's no way out, that I am going to drink based on everything I've done so far. That's what I do. I drink. And I can't have one and walk away. I drink and I go. And the pointer to the solution, as we talked about a few weeks ago, was step two. That I would get to a place of wholeness of mind, sanity, truth, God, all interchangeable. When this mind gets renewed, all wrongdoing comes from the mind. If the mind is transformed, what wrongdoing can exist? I need to have this transformation in the mind, which really goes on, though. It's a transformation awakening in the soul that I start to filter up in here, and I start to see different, start to hear different. I'm not listening to self anymore. Now, self goes dormant. That's the other guy or the other woman we all walk around with, that other person. That just shows up sometimes when bad things happen. That person takes over. When good things happen, I don't need to go to a meeting. I'm great. I'm rich. I do what I want. When lust takes over, when greed takes over, when the seven deadly sins show up, that's self trying to pull me away from the whole right here. Make a decision in three. And my decision in three was vastly different than it was recently when I did the steps with my sponsor. I had nothing the first time. I think I shared it last week. I was sleeping on my kid brother's couch. You know, I was unemployed. My dad had me on a 20-buck allowance, a 20-buck a week allowance, you know, taking buses to meetings and stuff, and it's how I did it. So when they turn my will and life over to care of God, my thinking and my actions and whatever else I think is me, it's an easy one. Take it. It's not good. And even then, I didn't know the depth of what they're asking me. But you accumulate years in AA, a gift of God, and you accumulate stuff and relationships and friends and money and possessions. Suddenly, I'm saying, God, you take it all. If you don't want to give it back, that's okay with me. Well, hold on a second. This is when the claw marks go in the wall. But I need to be willing to do that. The same thing when I go out and make amends, and I don't want to go to that person because I still dislike them, but I need to go see them to make it right. And when I hear the elders saying that they had those same type of challenges, but they got free, my desperation says, then go. Because I want what they have to offer, which means I'm willing to do what they do. And I did inventory. It's unbelievable the transformation folks like us experience. Because I'm writing my fourth step inventory. And I'm writing resentment, Joe, cause, and he did this to me. Mary, cause, did this to me. And I'm writing and I'm angry. I remember writing about this distant relative who violated me as a little boy. And I'm writing his name. I'm getting emotional and angry, and I close the book. And here we are. And we go do five. And the tree gets pruned in six and seven. Just when I think I'm done, it prunes some more. And it positions me to step eight, where I get a spirit of willingness from God to go fix. And what they asked me to do is the very same people I wrote about in my fourth step who had anger or venom and hate for, I'm going to those very same people and say, disregard what they did entirely. I harmed you. And that's what I'm here to repair. That is a spiritual transformation. That is a shifting consciousness and new eyes and new ears and an awakened soul where I can go to that person who I hated in step four and say, I need to make this right. Not apologize. I need to make this right for what I did to you, even though they did bad things to me. And so what I do at step eight is I take a look at the harm's cause. And most of that, my book says, comes from step four. But I have found a lot of that list comes from just looking at my life. Because there are people that I was resentful with where I didn't cause a harm to. There are people weren't on my fourth step list who needed to be put on that list. And it isn't only like I stole, I spoke terrible to someone, I got physical with someone, I cheated on her. But what about my manipulation? What about my dishonesty in conversations? What about how many times I led people to believe I'm something that I'm not? What about my gossiping? That's a harm caused. I infected you with my stuff. I hurt you with my stuff. I led you to believe a lie. I contributed to gossip on a street corner and slandered someone. That's a big harm caused. And it's a hole in my soul. And I don't need any more holes in my soul. I remember going to a guy and my sponsor, we would sit, and it's really important that I sit with the sponsor even currently before I just embark and go on to make amends. And there was this one guy, we'll call him Joe in Brooklyn. And I used to go to this clubhouse in Brooklyn, Park Slope Caton it was called. And a lot of people didn't like this guy, and I got right into it because I didn't like him either. And I got right into the gossiping and slandering. And then I began to wake up as a result of these steps. And what I found out, he was a really okay guy. The reason why I didn't like him, because he talked a lot about the big book. So how do I do this? I can just pray and stop gossiping. And I left it to God after talking to my sponsor. And one night I was at a meeting called the Bath Beach Group. And he's coming. There was a 7:15 and an 8:30 meeting. He's coming out of a 7:15 meeting. I said, can I talk to you? And I told him exactly what I had been doing. And I told him I had gone to those other people prior to tell them that I was wrong for gossiping about Joe. I cleared it up with them first, per my sponsor. And I told him. And he says, Pete, I'm so glad you said this because I'm having like the worst week of my life. And someone like you to come to me and say that, it feels good right now. And he gave me his best hug. We became really good friends after that. So this thing, this feuding in my mind that was going on was melted away in 2 minutes. And now when he would come into the room, we'd have a cup of coffee together and just talk like two AA guys. And there was no thing between us. I didn't have to say, so good to see you. And secretly, it's not really good to see you. It was good to see him. And I got free of that. And he got free of that. And he had another friend in Alcoholics Anonymous rather than all these people with the gossip and stuff like that. Huh? So step nine is about bringing me to a place of awakening. What step nine also tells me, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I screw that one up. I was in Brooklyn, and I'm walking down this boulevard called Bay Parkway, and I happen to see this old relationship. She's window shopping, and she sees me. I says, hi. And she darted across the street. And so I followed her. And I had no intentions other than making amends. And she was petrified of me. And she was standing by her house and she says, my husband's upstairs. And I had to leave. But the harm I caused that woman, I haven't caused to a woman since. So I have no right to just knock on someone's door and say, hi, remember me. Because they may have a husband, they may have a wife who might say, who's that? I don't know what kind of shape their relationship is in. I have no right to save my own skin, my big book says, at someone else's expense. I need to be tactful. I need to be considerate. I need to be understanding. This isn't about getting a notch on my belt. This is about doing God's work, a loving piece of work. The result of doing this right is awakening. And finally arriving to the present moment with not being driven by my past and the future I'm not so concerned about to the point where it's got me worried. I plan for the future. I'm not petrified of the future because I'm finally present. And I began to pray in step eight for willingness. Because my sponsor says, you might be willing, that might be coming from you. You need to go to God to fill you with willingness to go out, because this requires endurance. So I remember praying every night, Father, please give me the willingness to go out and make amends to them all. It wasn't for me to decide in step 8 who I'm going to go see and who I'm not going to see. That's step 9 work. I need to position myself. I'm ready to go. Drug dealers, gangsters, whatever it was, I'm going in. And I'm acquiring a willingness from God. And that's what I would do. It's very humbling when you realize you really don't have that kind of ability to go out and do stuff like this. Because when I would make amends, I couldn't believe I was standing in front of this person actually doing this. Where a year ago or 6 months ago, 3 months ago, I hated them. Our book says that 9 out of 10 times the unexpected happens, and how the most difficult ones seem to be the most beneficial. And I always like to share this story of a landlord that I made amends to. I was living in Brooklyn. My dad got me this little apartment after my 5th treatment center, a little studio apartment, with the hope of me getting on my feet and what he called doing the right thing. The problem was, after he furnished the apartment, I sold the TV. I took the TV right out the door. And the shoes and shoe boxes and the clothes and garment bags and everything else I sold. And I brought the Bowery into this place. And the gentleman upstairs, this landlord, had a wife, a little daughter, and his wife was pregnant. And he was working and going to school. And that's pretty admirable from where I am now. Working, going to school, wife's pregnant, she's a homemaker. Got a little daughter, a lot of responsibility, and he rents to me. And in a short time, we do what we do. You put me in a Taj Mahal, it looks like a crack house in 10 minutes. And I dismantled this place. A lot of ugly scenes in there. A lot of earthy characters showing up at all hours of the night. And almost burned the place down, and he threw me out. And I went to live on the streets for a while. So now I'm sober. And this guy's name is on the list, and I don't want to go see this guy. I'm still thinking about the ugly language he threw at me one day. He called me every F-bomb you can think of and threw me out. And that's what I was still stuck on. Well, I'm in a restaurant with my ex-wife, and we're having lunch or dinner. And it was a big place about the size of this room. And on the other side was this banquet going on of this family. And my ex-landlord was standing there talking to some gentleman, eyeballing me from across the room, just staring at me. I couldn't eat. I couldn't do anything. The sweating, the anxiety, and I need to get out of there. So I thought I was free, but I wasn't. I was still crushed by the weight of the past. And so I called my sponsor, and I shared with him what had taken place. And so my job was to write more inventory, resentment inventory on this person, because I was not there yet. So I wrote lots of inventory and shared it with them, wrote more inventory and shared it with them, and all the while praying for forgiveness and willingness to go see this guy that I did not want to go. But God's patient. Can I be patient with God as patient as God is with me? Usually no. But God was very patient. The ground wasn't fertile, so he had to mold some more and remove. Mold and remove. And I'm praying and doing the inventory and praying for forgiveness. And I'll never forget it. It was a Sunday morning, and I got dressed. I shaved, showered, and I got dressed. Put on a sport jacket, nice pair of pants and shoes. And I was saving money because I owed this guy about 3 months' rent that I never paid. And I had it in my top drawer in an envelope, and it was a bunch of money. Whenever that day shows up, and this was the day. And out the door I went. Because I was told, if you're going to go make amends, be the best copy of the big book you can be, because you may be the only copy they ever read. I didn't want to look like a felon showing up at this guy's door, because he hasn't changed. And you're not coming in. And I showed up to his house, and his wife answered, invited me in, and I sat with them. I made my financial restitution. And I made amends. I didn't say, I'm sorry. I said, what can I do to make this right? What do you need to tell me? And I explained to him what a terrible tenant I was. And I know I harmed you in this way, and that way, and this way. And they listened very patiently and very lovingly, very accepting. They're very happy I didn't live in their building anymore. That was one thing they were going. We shook hands. His wife gave me a hug. I'm going to forget, peck on the cheek. And out the door I went. And this is when it got the whole thing changed my life. Because I couldn't see God coming. Very rarely see God coming. But when God shows up, God shows up. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But when it shows up, bang, everything changes. There's this huge, spectacular upheaval that no words can describe this type of experience. But what we do in AA, we tell stories. The last thing I remember was shaking hands, her hugging me, a peck on the cheek, wishing me well. And that's all I can remember. I don't remember leaving. I remember walking to my car for a brief few seconds. And when I was on the sidewalk, I was very much aware that I could not feel the sidewalk under my shoes. I felt as if I was lifted up, like levitating, and I was wrapped up, I never forget it, in this yellowish white light, and I began to have tears roll down my eyes. It was a face. It was euphoric. It was absolutely euphoric. And I wasn't saying to myself, wow, this is some nine-step experience. I was part of this whole thing, completely unaware, and I swear to God, of anything around me. And that's all I remember. The next thing I recall is putting my key in a door to my building. The rest of it is somewhere in time. But I'll never be the same. Because if we talk, the elders always talked in AA about having the God experience, the godly experience, the one-on-one encounter with God, with our Creator, except you don't know when it's coming. And sometimes it looks like, how's it going to happen out of this? I'm going to this guy who I once hated. I'm going to make amends and get it done. And God says, now. It's the God we say, see, I was with you all along. And this is my proof to let you know I'm here with you. Because you can't even explain a God experience, but we tell a story. I didn't run to meetings afterward and says, guess what happened to me yesterday? In fact, my sponsor says, keep it close to the vest. Don't talk to your experience way. Just be with it. There'll come a time when God says, now, go share it. That's a nine-step experience that when folks have their back against the wall and are reluctant to make amends, God says, go tell them that story. Those difficult ones, the challenging ones. The most difficult one for me emotionally was with my family, who saw all my nonsense firsthand. I burned them over and over again. Big Book says years of living with an alcoholic can make any child or wife neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. I level my family for me, and I speak for myself to come to AA and say, I didn't drink today, I'm a winner. That's selfish, it's narrow-minded, it's arrogant, it's hypocritical. According to my book, it contradicts my book. God gives us enough power, endurance, and courage, and strength and direction to go back to those people and say, hey, I screwed up, how can I fix this? Because we're going, God's taking me by the hand and going. It's about getting free. The train has pulled out of the tunnel now. I'm not in the cocoon of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm out there. People are seeing me. They're hearing me. It better be godly. It can't be godly if I don't go with God. No hidden agendas. Make amends to get her back. Make amends to get on their good side. This is the right thing to do. It's proper. There's no relationship potential attached. I'm just trying to make this right. I've had the reality, I have harmed you. And so when I sat with my family, it was incredibly difficult because they heard a billion I'm sorrys. It'll never happen again. And a week later, can you bail me out? The car's totaled. The money's missing. The jewelry's missing. Another trip to rehab. And it goes on and on and on. See, what I don't see, and this is for youngins out there, what I don't see when I'm doing the relapse waltz, detox treatment, sober house, detox treatments, it goes on and on and on, that my family is dying 1,000 deaths every night. They're glad I'm in treatment. You know why? We can sleep. They're safe. When I get released, all the red alarms go off. Uh-oh, he's out. But my alcoholism is so vicious, it will not let me have any kind of compassion for family members who, when I'm in trouble, I'm going to call them first. It won't let me see that until we wake up and realize, oh my God, I love these people. I hated them at one time. They're so important to me. But how do I go? How do I go and make this right? And my sponsor says, not right away. You got to walk the walk. They're more interested in seeing the sermon than hearing a sermon. My actions will speak louder than any words I can come up with. So that's what I did. Went to work early, left when they said, kid, go home. Never borrowed a dime off of anyone. Showed up for family functions early. If I said I was going to be there at 8, I get there 7:45, even though I didn't want to go to that party. I didn't want to go to that wedding. I didn't want to go to the whatever. I'm there. And I don't have to do anything. I'm there. I'm just there. People pass away. I'm there. And little by slowly, I need to fit in there. They don't have to fit around me. But God allows me to be flexible like that. And so I went to my grandparents. I went to my aunt and uncle, my whole immediate family. Oh, I remember going to my youngest brother, my kid brother, and big, strappy, muscle kid, and he began to weep. And I says, Anthony, anything you need to tell me? And he was weeping. He says, I was so afraid that my older brother was going to die. Now, I knew that, but not like that. The impact of hearing those words that my kid brother, as big as he was, always looked up to me, the older brother, and he was afraid his older brother was going to die. And he said, I couldn't take watching you die little at a time. I got it. I got it. What can I do to make it right? Just be my brother. My middle brother was a little bit different. He told me something straight up. He's a very black and white kid. You did this. The old man never slept. We were fighting among ourselves. He told me, and I stood there and listened. Because part of my amends is to listen. Not be belittled. Not have dirt kicked on me. Our book says, we're not servile or scraping. The only one I'm going to bow to is God. And I listened. I went to my grandparents. This was funny because as soon as I started, my grandmother started crying. And I'm trying to explain to her, and she's talking to my grandfather. She's interpreting in Italian what I'm trying to say. This was like the meeting of the United Nations. It was interesting. But I do remember my grandfather. She was explaining to my grandfather what I was doing. He listened to her, and he just kind of waved it off. It's the old stuff. And I remember my grandfather becoming emotional, which he was never that way. My grandfather was from Italy. He spoke broken English and a lot of old ways. But I can't tell you how many times he would look at me and he never hollered at me. He would say, sit down. And he would try to, in his best English, tell me about fixing my life in his way. To get a job, meet a nice girl, things like that. That's how you fix things, according to him. But he was giving me his soul, his heart, and I didn't recognize it until I went to make amends. And I went to sit with my dad, and this was the last one I went to make because this guy saw it all, took me to treatment, cursed him out, just ugly stuff. You know, if I could ever be half the man my old man is, I'm a success. This is a man's man. And, you know, up until this time when I got into the work, I didn't even think of what it's like having a wife who's alcoholic and addicted to pills, constant suicide attempts. You're like 30 or 32 and your wife commits suicide and you got three youngins to raise and hold a job and do all the other things he was doing with head up and shoulders square. How do you hold this together without just putting a gun to your head and going postal? Or just packing up and leave. How do you hold it together? And he held it together. I couldn't see that till I got into this work. And I sat down with him one time. He says, you have a minute for me. I need to talk to you. And my dad being my dad, absolutely. And this is what happened. I began the amends and he stopped me. Got a couple of sentences into it. And he says words I'll hold on to the rest of my life. He says, all I ever wanted was my son back. And this tough guy began to praise this place, the people there. You just keep doing what they're telling you to do. I went to make amends to this one truck driver. This guy was one of those guys, you get him three blocks away, those big barrel voices. He was about 6'12", 250 pounds. His hands were the size of this podium. And I was about like 80 pounds soaking wet in the throes of my addiction. And I cursed him out royally one day. I mean, belittle the guy. He could have just twisted my head off. He shows up to the docks while I'm working, and I can hear him, and my mind says, don't do it. And I close my little door. I says, Father, please. I walk outside. I'm working. I'm sober, so I have money on me. And I owed him some money, too. And I go out and make the approach, which is the approach, and the amends is when it's completed. And this guy gives me the biggest bear hug, lifts me up off the ground, gives me a little slap on the cheek of affection. I never knew that him and my dad were friends forever. And he said something, I want to tell you something, kid. Now, my dad would never tell this to me. He's, your old man does nothing but talk about my son, beat this thing. That's how my dad referred to recovery. He beat this thing. He's, when your dad talks about your diner across the street, his chest goes out to here. The effects of living this life in a positive way compared to the way I used to live in a negative way where it would bring people down and suck the life. And my addiction sucks the life out of everything. And recovery is contagious. God is contagious. It breathes life into people. My job, as Marion always talks about, was now this living amends. I don't steal anymore, thank God. Isn't it funny what we do? If we go to an office and you fill out something, and you get to the elevator with the pen on the desk, you got to run back, say, I took your pen. It's a 15-cent big pen. They're like, what's wrong with you? But I'm going to drive all the way home with your pen. I can't do that. It's not because I'm special. It's just godliness. Stealing is stealing is stealing is stealing, period. You can't negotiate around stealing. So my family began to see what God was doing to me and started to experience that kind of spirit in their life. Shortly afterwards, both my brothers began to become members of Al-Anon and sought out help in the therapy, individual therapy. One of my brothers went to a fellowship called CODA for a while, but he liked Al-Anon better and he liked therapy even better. And both of them are back in church now. And that's how they're kind of finding traction over the years and dealing with the mom suicide and this tough guy dad and their older brother being a drunken bum for a long time. They've reconciled their past. But the catalyst behind it was the spirit that God gave me to go make amends first. That jump-started the whole thing, that things are different now. And the living amends is showing up again and being there. And I remember my middle brother, the one who was a little tough around my amends, when his marriage was breaking up, call after call after call, Pete, I'm afraid, what do I do? What do you do? What do you do? What an opportunity to share this message that we've been given for fun and for free in Alcoholics Anonymous, because our big book says we are sure its advantages. Our way of life has its advantages for all. That means outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Mom and dad and brother and sister and so on, our coworkers. This is something we live. I live. Do I make mistakes? Absolutely. Fall short? Absolutely. Get back on a horse and chop wood and carry water. Keep going. And I have found that God has given me endurance. I start good. I'm out of the starting gate. Everything's good. Like when you go to the gym for the first time, you get the new clothes for the gym. You get the thing that tells you how many steps you walked. And you go for like the first week and the second week. I'm not going to the gym. You know. Or you're eating a banana split. I'll get to it next week. That's how I operate, you know. AA says keep going and keep going. And how many times did I want to stay home? And you drive up to the meeting. How many times I don't want to take the call and you say, Peter, it's me. Who's there? How many times another fifth step, come on over. And it goes on and on and on. That's living present. That's living free. And how many times, I'll close with this, because of this work that we've become, if not completely transparent, so much more transparent with each other, our group. We don't have to tell everyone everything, but the group, the sponsor, the network, where we spill it, transparency, and most of all, transparent with God. I'm not under the delusional thought that I can be secret with God anymore. And so we pray. We have a prayer life, but I don't pray for self-glorification. I pray to glorify God. I praise Alcoholics Anonymous, not to say I'm a great member, but to praise Alcoholics Anonymous, the sacred fellowship. And I treat it as sacred because it is my church. I go to church. I'm a member of good standing in my church. This is where it began. I need to treat this accordingly, treat this proper. Because when this closes down, I'm in serious trouble. So I need to nurture my AA. And so I have no problem telling a newcomer, take the hat off at the podium. It's AA. Pull the pants up. No saggies. This is AA. You want to go to a nightclub? Dress like this. This is AA. Be proper. Because it's being proper with you. That's all I got. Peace. Thank you.
Let's thank the speaker one more time. And I'm going to have Chris come up and give the secretary a report.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris, and I'm your Republic secretary. In keeping with our seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I'm very happy tonight to be able to introduce Nate to come up here and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Here. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940s style big book sponsorship. And this is from the foreword to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we have seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I please have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics in the room? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Awesome. If I could have you stand up, please. Stand up. Awesome. Let's meet these folks and get these folks back to God. Excuse me. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. The fellowship starts at 6:30 and the Big Book study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, and the little red book and dictionaries for sale at the back table there. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Now we're going to go over to the announcements. These are announcements for AA. You can look here or over there. This is the Broward County Intergroup, so you can check out the intergroup. If there's the AA hotline, you can man the hotline if you want to. There's also great literature. We have some volunteer opportunities, and again, all these announcements are on the back table. We have the ninth. Okay. We're on to the next one. Meeting changes. These are important because if you show up to the meeting and the meeting has changed, if you're looking at an old where and when, you're going to show up and there's no meeting. So make sure you're aware of these changes if you go to any of these or if you plan to in the future. AA's Got Talent. It's going to be coming up. That's February 2019, but you know, alcoholics, we need to have a meeting about everything. So next slide. We have the first planning meeting for AA's Got Talent. It's going to be at that date at that location. So August 25th, please check that out if you want to be involved in running AA's Got Talent. Gratitude dinner planning, there's a lot of opportunities for service at this one, so please join us. You're welcome to help plan that and do some service as well. You can contact Tracy, that's her email. And the spaghetti dinner, this is awesome. Spaghetti's great, who doesn't love spaghetti? So here we're gonna pick committee chairs, more opportunities for service, more opportunities to take part in this fellowship. Next slide, women in recovery. This is... we have lots of women in the house tonight. Fantastic. So sorry, fellas, that's women only. Jersey Shore Roundup. You don't have to be from Jersey to go to this. Yeah, that's right. If you're from Jersey and you want an excuse to go home and get some recovery while you're there, feel free to check it out. Or if you've never been to Jersey and you want to see what all the fuss is about, all right. That's I think that's everything. These announcements are all at the back table. Thank you and have a great week.
Thank you, Chris. Sorry. We have tonight's sessions and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And those who wish to thank this tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, can't get it right. It doesn't matter.
Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Thank you. bum, 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 bum,